just looking at a LinkedIn post, and they're talking about branding and strategy, and everything in there was visual. There was nothing about sound, nothing about texture, nothing about taste, nothing. And it all goes together in the brand and brand perception. But sound is so strong compared to sight. It directs, it helps direct sight. It helps interpret what you're seeing. It helps shade what you're seeing.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Lawrence Minsky. My next guest is Professor of Advertising and Social Media Marketing at Columbia College Chicago. He's an advertising, branding, and marketing consultant for many of the world's leading brands, with more than 125 industry awards to date, and a co-author of numerous best-selling marketing and advertising books, including his most recent, Voice Marketing: Harnessing the Power of Conversational AI to Drive Customer Engagement, Global Brand Management, The Activation Imperative, and the one we're probably going to talk most about today, Audio Branding, Using Sound to Build Your Brand. His book is, in fact, one of the first I picked up when I decided to start a podcast on the subject. His name is Lawrence Minsky, and I can attribute a lot of what I've learned about audio branding to both him and his co-writer, Colleen Fahey of Cesium Sol. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time now, and I'm absolutely sure that if you're as interested in the power of sound as I am, especially as it pertains to advertising and marketing, you'll get a lot of great information from listening in. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available and what the newest audio chats will be about. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Lawrence Minsky. Welcome, Larry. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy.
Thanks for having me. This should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The first question that I like to ask, and hopefully you have an interesting answer for this, I think you might, is if you have an early memory of how sound moved you. Something you remember maybe from your childhood that really impressed you.
You know, I could remember going to a lot of concerts as a kid, so that impressed me right there.
Any particular bands or
Ella Jenkins,
artists?
So she's, a 100 and some now. So my parents would take me to a lot of her concerts.
Nice.
So that's my first memory of music outside of the fact, for some reason, my dad let some visiting musicians crash on our couch once, so we got to go to the concert
that.
And my dad was an immigration lawyer, and later he took me to, as a really, really young kid, to Led Zeppelin, where I was like in the 10th row center, so there was the stereo sound you could hear. So a lot of exposure to music as a young kid. So that's my first earliest memories of sound.
Nice. Yeah, those are good memories. My family was very musical as well, so I remember music being a big part of my background as well. Mm-hmm. It's special, and especially when you share it with your family. I think that's a big growing point when you're young.
And I mentioned, you know, he took us to, you know, some rock concerts like Zeppelin when I was really young, but he was really actually interested in classical, and that's what my parents, particularly my dad, enjoyed. So they took us to a lot of orchestra hall, Chicago Symphony Orchestra as well. He was a season ticket holder.
Nice.
For that.
Yeah. Did he play anything? Did your
not at all.
Yeah.
He is about as musically talented as I am in terms of playing stuff, which, you know, in the olden days, I knew how to put a needle on a turntable. I guess I could put, and today I think my hardest skill is my most advanced skill is pressing a button to get my music to play on my computer.
It's all good. We all need people to appreciate. Mm-hmm. Not everyone makes it.
No.
We need people to appreciate it, too. Mm-hmm. That's great. So from there, how did you get interested in advertising from there? Because music to advertising, and especially advertising with sound, like that's a whole other thing.
Well, I'll tell you two trajectories. One, when I was in high school. I've always turned my hobbies into money-making situations for some strange reason without thinking. So back when I was really, really young, I did some magic tricks. So somebody asked me to do a magic show, which I didn't have those kinds of tricks. I just had the little cheap stuff. And so I found somebody, had them, and we partnered. And so I would book the shows, and he would had the equipment. And we'd do all these kids' parties. And finally, I bought them out and just keep doing that. And I made lots of money as a kid doing these magic shows all over. And so I spent it all on records. I had back then, you know, over 1,000 albums or whatever, you know, very, very fancy turntable and all that. So I was always really interested in music. So when I went to college, in listening to music and the intricacies of it. So in college, I became a disc jockey at the college radio station. And then I became the program manager and then the student general manager. So, you know, in college, I had my own office at the radio station, and which was kind of nice back then.
I'll bet.
You know, nice air conditioned. Office. They even put a landline into my dorm room in case they needed to reach me at odd hours. And my cell phone, you know, pre-cell phone days. But so I always went on with that. And my dad, one of his clients was in a large ad agency here in Chicago. So I was always exposed to advertising, and I was a psych major, and I wanted to combine my interest in psychology, my interest in not just music, but, you know, media, and my interest in writing into one career, and advertising was it, since I knew about it. So that's how I got into advertising, and, you know, put together a portfolio and was just a copywriter. And then, so working on a brand, and we did, the owner of the agency, my title was Chief Creative Innovator. He wanted to do, an audio logo for the brand. It was, thought it would be more memorable. I don't remember.
Like, I'm just wondering how far back it was, because that's pretty far back, I imagine.
18 years.
Okay.
Back.
Okay.
So, maybe 20 years back, you know. So,
okay.
So the insight into the brand, the pickle, was that when you buy pickles, people eat a lot of them in the front of the refrigerator, and then they eat less of them, and then moves back, and then it moves back. And finally, it's at the back of the refrigerator, and they get all soggy and all that, and then you throw them out. And then you buy your next jar, because there's no pickles in your house, and you want that one pickle. And so it's at the front and keeps moving back and gets soggy and thrown out. Well, the research showed that people actually ate the entire jar of our pickles. So
that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, they for the brand I was doing, so they really loved, you know, the pickles, and so the owner of the agency, again, I'm supposed to be the writer, but he came up with it, the emptiest jar in the house. So what does that mean? Because you're emptying the jar, but what does that mean? It means that when you get your last jar, your last pickle, you throw the fork in there, right? Because you're always forking. So to try to get the pickle out. And so the audio logo, the Audiophonics, was the pickle, the fork dropping into the pickle jar at the end. And we then did all these radio spots where about the person trying to get that last pickle out, you know, how it always floats around and stuff like that. And by doing that, we did different songs, and we did a country song, we did a blues song, we did a rock song, a surfer song. And each time the fork trying to hit the pickle would be the percussion as part of it. And then at the end, it's always the fork and the jar, hearing the empty jar in the house. And we turned that brand around. It was a failing brand. We were hired to do the advertising for that brand because sales were going down, and it was a new spinoff of a publicly traded company. They were publicly traded, and they wanted to stop the slide of the sales because it would kill their stock prices. But we not only stopped the slide, we turned it around where in some cities we had a 40% share. So, oh, wow, this is
clearly, great. It works.
And
yeah,
it worked. And when research would show our competitor, who has the famous competitor with the stork, when they would run their TV spots in the markets that we were in, this was a regional brand, they would credit us. And they say, oh, yeah, I saw the pickle spot, meaning our brand. And no, we didn't run TV. We only ran radio. And we would run it on Thursdays when people were preparing their weekend shopping list. And it turned the whole brand around. We did a few other things, but that was the main focus of our advertising. So I thought that was really cool. And then
it is.
Somebody who worked with a prior agency, Colleen Fahey, had gotten into audio branding. And I started talking to her. We did, and said, you know, this is cool. And, you know, I thought I'd understood the whole scope of audio branding because I had an audio logo. And she said, oh, no, that's just the beginning. And then we got into it and started writing articles and then a book on it called Audio Branding, Using Sound to Build Your Brand. And writing
is a way. I love that book, by the way. Yeah, that was what introduced me to the whole audio branding spectrum. And yeah, I really inhaled it from cover to cover. So, so well done.
Thank you. The book has a life of its own. It's just continuing to chug along. Mm-hmm. People keep talking about it. Writing is how I learn about things. So it was a great learning experience for me, researching and writing and co-writing with Colleen.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. Quick question. Do you know anyone else who could benefit from hearing more about how powerful sound can be? If so, would you mind sharing this podcast with them? It would mean so much to me. Now I'll stop interrupting and let you get back to the show. Now, that was back in 2010, wasn't it? Was that when the book came out?
I think it was a little later than that, but yeah.
I'm trying to recall.
It's only 6 years old, 2017. I don't know. We could find
I
out.
I thought it was a little older than that, but yeah. I could. I have it on my shelf behind me.
But, yeah. I have it on my shelf over there, but I have to leave the screen to go get it.
I'll have to look. I know that you did a lot of case studies in that book that talked about earlier audio branding. Mm-hmm. So it's possible I got all that mixed up. But yeah, I really enjoyed that book a lot. And I found it very helpful to understand what all this was about. So when you were going through this and you were learning about it by writing it, what was the most interesting thing that you think you discovered when you were writing that book? Was there some and what, like a little bit of a nugget of something that just blew your mind?
Well, some of the things that I found really cool, it's really the sound. You know, sound is a defense mechanism. Is it were a way to get your alert up. So if you're doing a screen view of all these animals and you hear, let's say, an elephant, you're going to see the elephant first on the screen. If you hear a lion, you'll see the lion first on the screen. It really helps direct your visual cue. We're so focused on sight and sound. I was just looking at a LinkedIn post, and they're talking about branding and strategy, and everything in there was visual. There is nothing about sound, nothing about texture, nothing about taste, nothing. And it all goes together in the brand and brand perception. But sound is so strong compared to sight. It directs, it helps direct sight. It helps interpret what you're seeing. It helps shade what you're seeing. So it's so important, and we marketers forget it, and they just look at, well, maybe we should be 485 red. I don't know how many brands I've worked on with 485 red as their logo PMS, but it's really so much more than that, and it just gets forgotten.
Yeah. And you're sort of touching on something that I know that you've been involved in before, and that is sensory branding. Mm-hmm. So what drew you to the sound aspect of that? I guess when you started, you were doing all around sensory stuff, right? Wasn't that? So you began with the sensory and then sort of honed in on the audio portion of that?
I think I might have started with the sound and gone out, because I think I started with the pickle jar.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're dealing in food products, you do need to think of everything. So, you know.
Taste, especially, I would hope. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, taste is so subjective, too.
That's true.
You could... I read some research about a large brand and pizza, and, you know, blind taste tests, it scored off the charts. But then when they put the company name on the pizza, it scored below the floor, you know, as if it was awful. So brand perception
influences
taste.
Yeah, interesting. Sound, why do you think that is, though? Like, why would just knowing the brand of it make that suddenly not taste as they thought it should? I guess our brains are hardwired figure that
that's
out.
That's what I'm struggling to learn.
Yeah.
Totally, all that kind of interconnectedness. You know, there's Charles Spence at the Multimodal Laboratory at Oxford. He does all this research into all that stuff. But, you know, I find it fascinating, but I don't want to speak for his research, because he'll probably be able to give you more of an explanation than I could even venture to guess, you know, secondhand reading all that stuff. But it's fascinating how it can. And so, obviously, the texture, the mouthfeel of a product influences the taste of a food product, but what you're hearing around it influences it as well, what your brain is perceiving. So it all comes together. You know, and this is not new. I know Phil Kotler in the 1960s, he was writing about atmospherics, and that's, you know, the same exact thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know they've done studies. I've heard you mention the wine study with the French and the German wine. So, yeah, maybe if you could talk a little about that, just to let people know what I'm talking about here.
And that's in the book. And, you know, I'll talk a little bit about afterwards, but I don't want people to think audio branding is as manipulative as something like this.
Yeah.
But it's a classic study that was done in Europe, where a grocery store chain, I think was done in the UK. One day they would run French music and they would sell more French wine. The next day they would run German music and they would sell more German wine, and it would keep bouncing back and forth. Mm-hmm. And they would do intercepts and ask the people about what they heard, what kind of music and all that. And people didn't hear it at all. They didn't hear it consciously, where it registered enough for them to recall it, but it influenced what they purchased. And in a way, that's a little bit more manipulative, in that it's not about building a brand. It's about just selling one type of product versus another. But building a brand where you have a unique sound, it will help you think of that brand and send you to the brand and help reinforce the brand experience. And it also tells you about the brand, every kind of cue that's put out there, from the packaging, from the sound of the opening of the jar or opening of the package or whatever. That tells you cues about the brand, to how it looks, to how it feels, to, you know, to how it sounds when you crunch on it or open it and stuff like that.
Sure.
So everything needs to be thought of. And, you know, what is a car? You know, electric cars, they don't really make sounds. So you want a little bit of a sound to let people know you're approaching. There's a safety issue there.
You need to, yeah.
But what should that sound be? In cars, super strength metal, which is much stronger, much lighter. It's how they're making cars be more gas efficient by being lighter but stronger at the same time. But because it's thinner, it's tinnier when you shut the door. So that sends a cue. So then you have to engineer a sound that makes it sound substantial.
The sounds of the engines, too. I mean, I know that there are a lot of car manufacturers that have particular sounds to their engines and are actually doing everything they can to patent those sounds so that they can put them into an electric car if they happen to make an electric car that needs that sound. So there's also the interiors of the cars, right? Because the interiors of the cars, the makeup of that, the sound of that environment is becoming more and more important as these cars maybe become self-driving. So what are you doing in that car? You're listening to stuff more than likely, and you want a good environment for that listening. So all sorts of stuff going on in car manufacturing these days, and it's changing quickly, I think. It's starting to take on a life of its own.
Yeah, every category, you know, your washers now and dryers are now talking to each other and talking to you and letting you know when the loads are done and switching. And
you know, your phone and stuff as well, right? A lot of them are smart.
And how do you want it? What do you want it to sound like? What is it? You know?
Are you looking for ways to improve your company's or podcast's impact? You'd be surprised how powerful the use of an intentional audio branding strategy can be. Want to know more? I have a free downloadable PDF that gives you my 5 tips for implementing an intentional audio strategy at voiceoversandvocals.com/audio-branding-strategy. That location does ask to put you on a mailing list, just to send you updates on when the new podcasts come out. But if you really don't want to give your email out, I understand. Just contact me directly. My email is all over my website, and I'll make sure you get that PDF without needing to sign up anywhere. If you do sign up, though, you also get access to a resources section called The Studio, where I have videos, white papers and PDFs, discounts from my guests, and snippets of audio from my guests that no one else gets to hear. So maybe it's worth your while. Totally up to you. And of course, if you're looking for voiceovers, you can get in touch with me about that, too. Now, back to the podcast.
So what do you say to people who think that this is manipulation? Like, what would you, how do you explain? I mean, psychologically, we know how it affects us, and it certainly, I think it could be used for manipulation, but like, where does advertising, where does it add, where does it draw the line?
Is it pure manipulative to get you to buy the product, such as French wine versus German wine or whatever. We want to push that. Or is it telling you about the brand? And the color you wear tells you about who you are as an individual, right? Other people see, oh, you're wearing, you know, you like a lot of red. That helps define the individual. Same thing with the brand. What is the definition of the brand? How does it get defined? What does it look like? That's really more audio branding. What is, how do we convey the personality and the core essence of the brand versus how do we just get you to use the, you know, buy us, right? So that's the difference. That's what branding's all about. Branding is who are you? And, if you like who they are, you'll like the product. And there is a little bit of, you know, you use a product, so psychologically you have to like the product. You know, there's a chicken
one
and the
think.
Egg, which comes first.
Yeah.
Well, if you manipulate people, and if you, I wouldn't say in a promotion, brand activation. Mm-hmm. If you activate a brand where your brand, two brands are on the shelf, they're equal, but you just happen to have a coupon on your phone for one of the brands. So you're going to buy that brand. So then you take it home and it was just a small little difference. And then you try it and you say, well, I actually like that. That's why I bought it. You know, you rationalize it so that you actually prefer it. And hey, aren't I smart? I got to save 10 cents on it too, as opposed to that's what influenced me. People don't want to admit that they're being influenced by the 10 cents off or whatever. So they are, a lot of people. If it's a dollar off or, free jar, then they might say, yeah, I just got it because it was free. But if it's a small little thing, people then do say, oh, the reason I bought it is because I actually like it. And then so there is that kind of thing. On the other side of things is the branding. It's what is the brand all about and communicating. And that's where this comes in versus the other where it's, let's pull this lever to get you to do it. And let's pull that. Yeah. This is more, it's the same thing as using, again, 485 Red, right? 485 Red has a vibrant red. It's an energetic red. So that conveys things about the brand. Sans serif font versus a serif font might convey things about a brand. Well, what about the sound? Is it a deep sound, soft sound, going up sound, going down sound? All that conveys stuff about the brand. Mm-hmm. And all those little cues come together to form the impression. And hopefully the impression that it forms is the one the brand marketer wants.
Well, yeah. And hopefully one that the person buying the product can relate to, because otherwise, I don't know that they'll buy if they don't feel aligned with the product. Is that kind of where we're heading in that? I don't know.
Ultimately, yeah. If you don't like the product, you're aligned is if it ultimately, if it doesn't solve your problem, it doesn't solve your need. But you also, that just gets down to features and benefits. But beyond that, brands are, they're pretty much the same. What sets it apart? Products are pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. What sets it apart? It's the branding.
How well do they do what they say they do? Mm-hmm. And you tried them to know?
Mm-hmm. The brand perception, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. And so we're also talking about things like AI these days, which is influencing everything and just everywhere right now. But I'm curious what you think it'll do to the world of audio branding. Is that going to change things?
Well, the real answer is I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
What is changing things is there's more audio-enabled devices and more audio-enabled interfaces with generative AI. You have voice, you have conversational AI, which is another book I have out called Voice Marketing. And so they could work together so you can talk to your computer and go back and forth with the generative AI through voice conversational AI. So that's going to change things, how you interact with your computer and have voice and sound and all that kind of stuff. Just the all devices being technologically enabled is just going to make audio so much more important. Conversational AI in terms of, your little device on your counter in your kitchen, you talk to your Siri or your Alexa, whatever. And that's going to make voice and audio branding and audio that much more important. It's getting easier and easier to put sound into everything. Put it that way.
It's true. Yeah. It is everywhere.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.